to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials, where we help you accelerate your career and turn soft skills into hard money by mining gold from project failures, bringing insights from ecosystem experts, and inspiration from others on the trail. Now joining us with over 20 years in the ecosystem, please welcome our host, John Klein.
Welcome, Eric. Great to be together again for an episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. What's new?
I mean, gosh, so many things. I took some vacation. I mean, the Salesforce releases are happening every 2 weeks, it seems like. The product is changing like crazy, and it's almost summer. So it's amazing.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm sure many people are getting ready for that. And I think certainly on my side, it's been super fun. We're looking forward to summer as well. It's heating up a bit. And it's been fun to check out some Dreamin conferences over the last few weeks since we've last touched base. Ethan, I'm not sure we even had a, did we have a Trailhead DX kind of debrief? I'm not sure if we even had that.
Yeah, we'll go back and check the archives.
Yeah, but good. Well, so I'd love to start here with just something interesting, like news-wise. So this is a fun story. It's, you know, did you hear earlier this week that there was a summer news reading list put out?
Oh, I did. I saw you sent that to me, and then I saw the back and forth. So I tell us the story.
Well, so essentially, as I understand it, there was a reporter who put together, with the help of AI, a great summer news reading list. You know,
our imagine new the guy, he's got a deadline. List.
Yeah, whatever.
Like thinking, oh my God, I got to get this to my boss.
Great books, you know, put some criteria in. So that's one thing, to put together the list of books. Okay, fine. Uh-huh. Well, turns out that several of the books on the list were actually not even written by real authors. And then other books on the list were attributed to be written by other authors who didn't actually write the book.
What a mess.
Which I thought was, so to me, it just highlights this aspect of AI can offer so much benefit to us, but there are definitely still some areas that we have to follow the fine print that all of the models say at the bottom, which is AI can make mistakes.
Yeah.
Check our work.
But you know what that was? That was hallucination, because the author didn't feed in grounding data.
Mm.
In every example, I have yet to see an example of a RAG instance where, you know, retrieval augmented generation, where you say to the agent, hey, given the following information, what are the best books? And that's a hard one to do, because that requires the agent to go out and scrape the web and organize information. So I'm guessing that the reporter may have just asked a question to the LLM, and maybe wasn't one of these smarter people with a more advanced agent, where that agent had web scraping capability, and that web scraping could have grounded from multiple known sites. If you say, based on the information from the New York Times, Amazon, and whatever, what are the top titles for this month? It would bring those in, and it could assimilate those, and it would give a good, smart answer. I'm pretty sure that's a pretty reliable answer. But when you go and say, hey, format your information the following way and give me anything you got, it has no, the facts that it draws on are statistically near each other in the model, but they're not necessarily linked to each other in the model. And you end up getting interesting book titles, but then the author,
yeah, it's like sorting your spreadsheet, just one column, you know?
Exactly. Yes. Same data, just mess. So anyways, I hear customers come to me and say, oh, well, what a hallucination. And I'm in a business context, I think the likelihood is low as long as you're using grounding. Like you're grounding it on your best practice guide or your product data sheet or your whatever. If you ask a question and it's coming from there, and then you should have citations turned on.
Yes. That's good.
Because I'm still checking, like I'm using Notebook LM.
Yep.
I just had to do my quarterly wrap up of my whole team's performance, and they all wrote to me about the great things they did this quarter, and then I had to roll it up to my boss, and I'm taking like 4 pages sheet slides from each of my employees on the great things they did this quarter, and I'm trying to aggregate it into something, make sense of it, so that my boss can roll it up to his boss. And so I put all the slides into Notebook LM, and I said, here's the structure of each slide deck. Tell me what everybody did from a learning perspective. Tell me what everybody did from a workshop perspective. Tell me what. And I was skeptical, and every time it gave me an answer, I could click over the citation, and it was like, oh, dang, that's right.
There's the source.
Dang, that's right too. Oh, it actually, oh, yeah, I didn't find any mistakes. I sound like I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. That was grounded. I'm not. So, anyways, that's a long, long, long tangent. You must have touched a nerve. Yes, there is risk in agents in AI if you just ask it a question without grounding. But if you automate, if you already have grounding on a document or grounding on data records, you're basically using the LLM as a grammatical engine, and the facts are coming from your grounding data. And that hallucination is about the facts being wrong. And so if the facts are right, and then you're just using the LLM as
Organize it all
the
and stuff.
organizer, then as your scribe, then, it should be much higher quality.
Yeah, I actually really like this as a, in my, I gave a presentation last week at Tahoe Dreamin, and it was called People First Power in the Age of AI. And one of the things I highlighted was essentially I talked about human skills, things like empathy, adaptability, right? And then AI focused skills. And I actually used AI to ask, I asked, what do you think your best skills are? And it was things like, analytical ability, organizational clarity, right? Like very different things from the human skills. And so it very, very much highlighted the complementarity. And then I highlighted and said, well, let's talk about some AI risks that are also in common with human risks. And I talked about things like plagiarism, hallucination, things like
We don't call it hallucination in English. We call it, what's it called? A fisherman's tale? When a fisherman exaggerates the size of a fish, like we do similar
sure.
things.
Exaggeration for sure. And also Machiavellianism, right? We do that as well. So my point was highlighting that these
Now,
are
hold on,
not
back up a
traits.
second.
Yes.
What's Machiavellianism?
Machiavellianism is like when someone is Machiavellian, it's kind of like you might say that the ends justify the means.
Yeah, I
They're
heard of that.
willing to, so data shows that some AI models, if the goal, if there's something that gets in the way of the goal, such as framework or rules or
Start it.
whatever, it'll absolutely remove those to get to the
Got it.
goal,
Got it.
right? So that's a Machiavellian
The end
risk.
justifies the means.
Exactly. And it doesn't always tell you that it's
Get
doing
there at all costs.
yes, exactly. So the highlight was, okay, if AI has a tendency to do this, and what you're talking about around like RAG data and grounding, those are my favorite types of tools actually to use. I'll highlight some other examples in a sec. But my point was, okay, recognize that this is a potential whenever you're using these tools, because everybody's coming out with an AI copilot and they want you to use it. And we have to find a way to navigate that paradigm between like cancel AI, like the stop AI.info people, and the just trust AI, like the Sam Altman type people, and find a way to navigate that future, right? Is to find a way. And so these tools, if we're talking about off platform, right? Notebook LM is great. The assistant API at OpenAI is great. A custom GPT at OpenAI is good. A gem on Gemini, right? These are all ways that you can create these efficiency boosts and productivity boosts while using only grounded data as the facts. So I really like the way that you describe that. And I know on platform with Agentforce, this is all possible too for internal agents that help staffers and such to get their work done.
Yeah, internal, external, and then we have this SDR agent. One of my technical architects is setting this up with a customer where it's an email interface back and forth where, a prospect can say, yeah, I filled out your form. I'm not interested. And go back and say, like, are you sure? We do this, this, and this. Anyways, those are all what it does out of the box. You're right.
Nice. Well, here's
One thing, how do you ground yourself? What are you doing to find the balance between the extremes?
I think one is I tend to narrow my horizon on what I use so I can really gain more depth within a more narrow set. So the reason I knew about all of these kind of grounded tools is because those are the ones I tend to focus on off platform. So I use Notebook LM all the time. I even for this podcast, right? Once I do it, I transcribe it. I help it. I use it to create my title, subtitle, all my chapters, including all of the it knows my average word pace, and so it actually even does the time codes for my chapters, so that when they go up, people can click on a specific chapter and get the topic they want.
That's
Pretty
so
cool.
cool. Yeah.
So I use that, and then I've been growing more gems.
Yeah.
You'd
Okay.
find, I mean, I built this really silly one just to help people understand what is a gem.
Yeah.
And I made one that any word or phrase that you type in, it'll immediately respond with a dad joke that's a Salesforce theme, right? So here, while we're here, I'm gonna tell you one of those. Here we go. So AI
Some
Studio.
people are hackers, and that's not this.
That's not this, but it does help people get their head around what is a gem, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So I'll find it in a sec here, but
Okay, let me kill time. I've got two books that I'm using to
yes.
like find my ranges. One is it's called The AI-Driven Leader. Can you see that?
Yes.
I'm a manager. I don't need AI to write an email for me. It turns out you can use AI as your thought partner. As a business person, you would use it this way. I have a problem. I have a strategy problem. I have an HR problem. I'm going to make a presentation to my board. Here's my presentation. What will the board say, given that you know LLM, you know the profiles of my board members and the feedback they provided in the past? So that one's got some great examples in like chapters 7, 8, 9, or 10. I can't remember what it is. And this one is called AI Snake Oil. And AI Snake Oil is written by a Princeton professor who I'm only in like about the third of the way through, but it's basically saying machine learning is super skeptical. And all these industries are finding out one after the other that the bets they're making using machine learning have been inaccurate. I can't remember which European country it was, but it was like the Netherlands in 2020 deployed a machine learning model to estimate which of their residents were fraudulent in their claims for family care. They ended up extracting $20 million or something like that in fines from their citizens. And then it was found out by the population that AI was causing these fines. And these people weren't all or most fraudulent in their activities with the government. And the gist was the prime minister resigned when it was found out that this happened. So these things are deployed at scale by people who are not data scientists in ways that affect people's livelihoods. Is this person likely to jump bail at a courthouse? Is this person, should they be approved for a mortgage loan? Are they high risk or not? And people's li health care, UnitedHealth was using AI to deny claims. And then the employees of UnitedHealth were getting punished if they argued or differed too often with the AI judgment. And people were being evicted from their care facilities after 17 days because that's what the statistics said, based on their age and health and race and whatever. That's a big jug. And then bad things ensued for UnitedHealth. So anyways, I'm at that point right now. So I think for anybody in AI, just really good, because I drink a lot of Kool-Aid, it's really good to actually hear the other side so that when I can go in and I could, as a consultant for you, or I can go meet anybody else that I meet with, and I can be rational and reasonable in my expectations for AI and the expectations I set about AI.
And the trade-offs, right? I mean, really, that's we're supposed to be kind of, in a sense, at least be able to present ourselves as objective people, right? Who are not wedded to any particular outcome and helping people understand the trade-offs. I wholeheartedly agree. I'm going to get that. We'll have the links to those books in our show notes. I wanted to show you real
You were
quick
saying, what's your dad joke? Go ahead, your
this
gem
work
you
on
made.
here. Here we
So
go.
what is a gem, first of all?
So a gem is essentially, but back to your point about grounding, right? So you have grounding data. think about kind of pre-setting that in advance, that I'm going to ground this.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's called like a, it's not a system prompt, but sometimes it's called like a framing prompt.
Yeah.
Whatever it perceives, it doesn't go straight to the larger model. It first interprets it through your framing prompt and then goes and leverages the model to do
Right.
the with the vector database and all that and the
Right.
inference, and then brings it back based on what your framing model asked it to do with the information. So I look at it almost like a method. Like if I'm a developer, I have a method, I need a couple components into my method. I then process it using those components, and then I have an output. The
Yeah.
gem is like the method before it goes to the database, right? What pre-processing am I doing before I go to the database? Then it comes back, and then it sends it back to me like a response to the method.
Yeah, and Gem is the Google Gemini version of
That's the
Common,
Gemini version of
right?
the.
And then OpenGPTs are called
So
OpenGP,
the
OpenAIs.
OpenAI is, yeah. So it has
Oh.
what's called a custom GPT,
Yeah, right. Okay.
right? And you,
Those
so,
are analogous. Those are the
yeah,
same essentially.
same idea. And then there's even one that's more extensive called the Assistant API, right, which can do that. And then yeah, Notebook LM is very similar in that it's for you, your use in within a team. Like I have one of those. That's how I keep track of all of my data across 25,000 projects over 30 years, right? Why they fail. So I just go back. I call it my wise uncle. I have wise uncles in Notebook LM. And so I want to go to my failure wise uncle and I'm going to say, hey, what are the top three reasons why projects fail? I forgot. And it's going to go, here you go, right?
Right.
Communication, poor project management practices, and a lack of an agreement on our finish line. All right, so here, let me try this real quick. See if I there we go. All right. So for those watching on YouTube, you can see how this is working here. So give me a phrase to type in.
Transformational consulting project.
Oh, wow. Transformational consulting project.
We
Here we go.
haven't practiced this in advance, so we'll see what happens.
Why was the Salesforce consultant so good at baseball? Because they always helped clients with their transformational pitches.
Hey, that's
Okay.
kind of that is
Not
a
bad,
lame
not
Michael
bad.
Gabb
I
joke.
was going to put in snake oil. I'm going to put in snake.
Okay, snake oil.
Mention AI snake oil. Why did the old-timey salesman struggle to sell his snake oil to the Salesforce admin? Because the admin knew true transformation comes from declarative tools, not dubious elixirs.
I
Okay.
mean, it does make sense.
Does. What's another
Funny,
one?
but it's also dad jokes aren't funny. What's another one?
You can be totally non sequitur. Like, for example, I'm going to put chicken noodle soup.
Okay.
Why did the chicken noodle soup get hired as a Salesforce admin? Because it had all the right ingredients for a healthy org. Okay.
Oh, interesting, interesting. So basically, it's finding. What is the prompt that you're using?
Yeah, so the prompt here, let's see if I can edit this here. Okay, here it is. So I'm editing the gem now, and so you can see here are the instructions, right? So I tell it, right, you're a helpful AI specializing in creating corny dad jokes related to Salesforce. When given a word or phrase, you'll try to incorporate that into the Salesforce themed dad joke. So here's the input, there's the output, and then here's the joke generation logic, right? If it contains a word, I just kind of share, right? If it contains a word related to Salesforce, and then I give it some examples.
Right.
Right? Like, why did the lead get a promotion? Because they showed great potential. Okay, great. And the thematic connection, this is key, is it's not always syntax and verbatim, it's themes. Right? So, what kind of database do Salesforce gardeners use? A field-based one. Okay, great. So, these are just examples. And then you have a tone, right? You just lay out, like, these are the people first dimensions, right? The first part is who is my persona? What's my goal? And then the
Right.
final part, the bookend, is what's my style? And you know, well, who's my audience on the output? I could have added a lot more here. And in fact, I just used AI to help create this. So I said, I want to create a gem and I want to create instructions. So help me create instructions. This is what I want it to do. This is our examples. And it actually produced the instructions that I was able to copy paste into the gem
Yes,
as part
yes,
of the process.
yes. So we all suck. Well, beginners, I suck at creating prompts. I create prompts as well as I create code. I need to start with an existing code and then I can code. I don't code from scratch, rarely. I mean, the
Right.
last time I started a class from scratch and I built it up, like I can't remember when that happened. Asking GPTs or Gemini for a prompt design is like, I don't know. Is that a well-known secret?
I'm not sure, but I think for me, it's just like we do in like, we want to get away from blank canvas as much as possible because it's demotivating for one,
Yeah,
right? It's
you get
hard to
writer's
get
block.
momentum. And for repetitive activities, it really helps to frame because otherwise you're talking about RAG data. I have to manually include that into
Right.
every prompt I'm writing, right? So I have to keep writing, okay. There's a great little analogy of like the five P's of what every prompt needs, right? And so persona, right? You need to have the output, it does one, right? Like there's all these elements. And so you got to include that every single time. But if you know you're going to do things over and over again, then why not give some instructions that say, look, every time I use this, inherit all of these four P's already, so I don't have to type them in again. They're just there.
And tell me what I'm missing.
And tell me what, yeah, that as well. So that's a nice thing. And on the thinking partner, I always definitely recommend people on the thinking partner as well as on the, let's call it the skeptics path, right? So you want to test the Kool-Aid, right? Test, like trust, but verify. A guy named Stephen Klein, that's Stephen Klein. He is also a great author. He's an adjunct professor at a few different schools, and he has a thinking partner AI tool called Curiouser.ai. I think we're going to have him on the show in a little bit here. But to your point, he is a skeptic about all of the claims and promises that people are being led down this dead end road that we were led to in the 60s and in the 70s and in the 50s. Already, the road just might be wider, more lights, faster cars, but it still might be a dead end as it relates to its promises. But that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of tremendously beneficial ways to use AI that are just not the fully autonomous kind of AGI utopia that people are really aspiring for.
Right. I think the only people talking about AGI are people who have stock to sell.
Probably true, because those are, I mean, they aren't even making money, right? The only people making money in AI right now are consultants, right?
I mean, they're probably losing money because the money they're spending on investment in LLMs,
Oh my
despite
gosh, it's $1 billion a month.
their $20 a month subscriptions they're getting from us on OpenAI and whatever else, but.
Very few, yeah. I mean, the data I've seen shows that an open or a ChatGPT search is 10 times more expensive than a Google search. And also that. The idea, like, even though ChatGPT is the fastest growing consumer product in history, most users don't pay. So all that to say, getting back to the Salesforce world as well, is these things, when it comes to creating documentation, when it comes to putting together great meeting summaries, when it comes to like compiling, like let's say you're going to help somebody onboard into the project on the client's team. Hey, how about taking all the transcripts that you have from all of your recorded videos, dropping them into Notebook LM? Like the paid version, you can do 300 different sources. You can make each source really long. And then say, hey, provide that a nice little summary document for them that has the citations, and they can go back to the specific video if they want to see that. What an amazing value add that
That's like a
is.
tutor. You basically just created a tutor,
Yes.
and you can either ask it to export a curriculum, or in the middle of a curriculum, I can go back and say, bring me back to where this came
Totally.
from. I want to know more.
Yep.
We do this all the time. We hire people at Salesforce, and the product changes so fast every time we have to revamp the ramp document that we put TAs through. And we would have to do the same thing with Notebook LM. But imagine if all the work that three TAs just put into ramping one new person on my team with all the peer certs and things we do, if it was recorded,
Yes.
and then if we did it for across three teams and we had three different takes on the same topic coming into one place. I mean, I would think it would give us great content.
Yes, I agree. And I think that that's a great use for that, those internal grounding tools. I even think about also, like, from a traceability standpoint, there's some great products that help with this. So some, for example, we interviewed a couple episodes back called Cluebot. Another one that's coming up is called Auctor, Auctor. These are essentially AI support tools for consultants and stakeholders to help them have traceability on like their features to be able to kind of maintain some of those artifacts over time. So there's some good stuff that's not AGI focused. It's very complementary, what I would consider people first AI focused, which is great. So that's cool. So let's transition now to what I'm excited about, and I wanted to
Great.
share. I've been working on we have some demand from people for AI projects that essentially are, one sec. This is my,
I'm gonna go check on something right back.
yep, go ahead.
Back.
All right, be back. You good? All right, perfect. That'll be edited out. So we get some demand from people for projects that where AI needs to be employed, and it's outside Salesforce as well. So Salesforce is really just a data source. So we've been I've won a one project right now where we're using a product called Crew AI, the open source version of Crew AI. And essentially, what we're doing is, imagine if you have a sales process going on. You got lots of different opportunities. You're leveraging, you have multiple contacts on the account, some of which are in your opportunity roles on that opportunity. And you're logging activities across various people on the team against those contacts. Ideally, this is what you're doing, right? In sales, service, whoever, whenever they make contact with these people, you have a one contact across the organization, so you can get a full view of who that person is, even if they have some service things going on, maybe an upsell, a renewal, whatever. So, and then that company that they work for, and maybe even that person, there might be things that they have going on their website. There might be news. So if you went to your salespeople and said, hey, you have 25, 30, 50 deals right now, and they've kind of stalled. You haven't heard back from them in about a month. What are you going to do to make contact with these people and kind of start up a new conversation? I don't know. Maybe they have an event. You have an event coming up and you can invite them, but how do you know what's relevant to them? To get people's attention, you really got to think about what's relevant to them. So imagine you could go to a prompt in Slack and say something like, I want to get back in touch with, pyramid construction. What are some ideas? And so it says, okay, give me a minute. So it goes down and says, okay, first of all, it confirms, hey, you mean this pyramid construction, right? In Salesforce? And I say, yes. Great. So it goes and it interrogates Salesforce, finds that account, finds the open opportunity, finds the various products, finds all the activity related to the contacts in the contact role, finds all the related contacts to the account, brings all that data back, goes through the account details, or excuse me, the activity details, if there's any chatter details. Then it comes back and it starts to go through the web and it looks at the company website, sees if there's any events. It goes and checks like a few news sources, maybe TechCrunch or whatever, finds out information about the business, maybe even where the business is located, and finds out local events and festivals that are going on in the local area where these people live. And then it brings back a summary and says, okay, here's an idea. How about Joe is a big pickleball player and there's an MLP pickleball event going on in his hometown within a month.
Is that Major League Pickleball, MLP?
Yeah, Major League Pickleball,
Okay.
right? And another one might be, in the activity that we have here, or maybe there's a recorded call, maybe there's a transcript. There's all kinds of information we could gather that's in Salesforce, right? And say, hey, they could highlight that they loved jazz. And there's a jazz festival coming up in their hometown within the next month. So the key here is to think about, first of all, I love it because, of course, we want to
Is
make
this Crew?
conversations.
Which app is this?
Crew, yeah, this is Crew AI.
CRU.
Crew.
Okay.
Yeah. There's an open source product. They also have an enterprise product, which is amazing and was quite complimentary. Have a built-in integration to Slack, super solid. So we're using the open source tool because we really want to get into the weeds and understand how we can tune it. But what I love about this is, if you think about, if I want to open up another a conversation on a dead account with somebody, I need to do it in such a way that really values who the people are, right? That it's not just me trying to sell them something, it's really me trying to connect and like really engage them as who they are as people, which really requires me understanding a little bit about what their wants are. Because nobody wants to use Salesforce more. They want to use Salesforce more so that they can have more time to have fun. You know, and when I was talking about one of the co-founders of Hubble, he said, look, back when we were at Transaction on Demand, that was our key. Our guiding North Star was, how do we give people more time to have fun? Because if we're not delivering the platform that gives people more time to have fun, we're not doing our job. And I love that. And so that's what I was thinking about here. And I love this solution, which is, this just helps people connect on a real level. They're known, you're doing a little effort for them. And you might just find that, you know what, you're going to hit a jazz festival with this great enterprise account. And while they're there, three shows in, they're going to be like, you know, dude, I was thinking, can you guys help me with A, B, and C? Right?
Right, you arrange for serendipity.
Exactly. You know, it's basically like you always shared with the luck,
The luck surface area.
luck surface area,
The
right?
more people you tell, and what's the other axis?
Yeah, well, it's do more, tell
Yeah,
more, right?
that's right.
And so, to me, this is a way that right in Slack, within 5 minutes, I can really get something that comes back to me. I'm not asking AI to do it for me, because everybody can see through that right away, right? It's not proper syntax that's going to convince that person to do anything with me. It is having the insight that then I curate and figure out, based on my relationship with this person, how can I engage them and motivate them to move forward?
So you're they're grounding their information on facts and giving you an idea, and then that's basically grounding for your brain to take that
Yes.
idea and deliver it authentically the way you would
Got
do
it.
it.
Yeah.
That's
And it
pretty
has
cool.
citations, so it can't make up anything. The actual events have to have links, right? The data is in Salesforce, right? All of it's based on real facts. And now it's just compiling it and making it so I don't have to do all that research.
Yeah, amazing. That's amazing. That's inspiring. I mean, that's I think in The Devil Wears Prada, there's a character where, this woman, whatever her name is meeting all these celebrities and fashion people, and she has a little minder speaking in her right ear saying, "Look over there, it's the mayor and his whatever girlfriend, and his wife is not in the room right now." Whatever these secrets are, just to prepare Glenn Close, I forget who the actress is. It's probably not her, but everybody will let me know that I was wrong. For the right conversation to make that introduction and grease the wheels. And that would be the system. Not, people say CRM is a data entry system. And I think a V1 instance of Salesforce is data entry. You get information, you get more than data entry once you integrate Salesforce to backend systems, and you can actually see payment history and order history, and maybe if you're integrated Zendesk or whatever, I can now see support in one system. But now to have also a new dimension of it offering this higher level relationship tips to you, I think is really a cool use case. That's really awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. And I use the paradigm of Salesforce starts out as descriptive, but people used to call it their Rolodex, for those of you who know what a Rolodex is. Okay. So it goes from descriptive, ideally, to prescriptive, which is like, oh, okay, great. Now I'm organizing this into list views, prioritizations, analytics, dashboards that are kind of sharing, helping me have a path to clarity to make decisions. So from descriptive to prescriptive. And then now, hopefully, I can go even further and start to leverage Einstein and other aspects to make it predictive. So now I can actually look further into the future and understand, all right, what are my course corrections? What are my expectations? And how do I make sure that I'm on track for a little bit further, runway into the future?
Cool. That sounds really cool.
Nice. So, what are you excited about these days?
So I mentioned these two books. I found them. A month ago, I was like, I'm not using AI, and I could be using, I must be able to use AI. I must be able to work smarter. I must be able to learn faster. I must be able to do something better with AI. It is so impressive in Notebook LM or the ways that I use it or that I've experimented. I went to a car race. It was like a NASCAR or something like that. And I had never been to NASCAR before. And I asked ChatGPT, what's the history of NASCAR? Why does it
That was
exist?
great.
So like, what am I getting into here? Why? Whatever, you know, it gave me a briefing. It was great. But you know, that's not for work. And then I thought, you know, if I'm going to use this, I probably have to re-engineer the way I work so that my work product is AI ready. And so what that means is turning on transcriptions on meetings. It means feeding transcriptions, if necessary, into a notebook LLM. It means, you know, taking the content from my team at the end of the quarter and putting a notebook LLM. And it means, you know, things like that. But then, where did I get this book? I think I heard a podcast. I started looking for podcasts on AI for business users, AI for managers. So I found this AI-driven leader book. I listened to half of it on Audible. I read the other half, and I got through it pretty quickly. And now it's a reference for me. But it also opened my eyes to this thought of thought partner. You are the thought leader. It is your thought partner. You know better than it what's relevant and what's applicable. And so that was inspiring. But the challenging thing about AI is it never sleeps. So something I heard in one of the podcasts was, on the one hand, when you work with an AI partner, you can make so much progress developing your idea so fast. Or in your project design, you can say, what's my outline for my project? What's my communication plan? What are the pitfalls of the communication plan? What are the gaps in my project? And all of a sudden, you've got 2 hours of work done in like 15 minutes by asking the right questions. The downside is that's also really exhausting because we're used to working with people and saying, gosh, I'm stuck. Let me ask John. Hey, John, what would you do? I want to put together a cold call script. Can you take a look at this? And now you can take a mental break from that project and send it over to me, or I can send to you. And like, you'll come back with me, but I won't have thought about it for a while, so we can take a break. But when you're working with AI, it's like it's on all the time, and it's challenging you in a way to keep coming up with smarter questions because you're the limiting reagent. That's one thought. So I got through these books, AI Driven Leader, and then Snake Oil I'm working on. The other thing I found interesting to get outside of like the views I'm getting at Salesforce on AI and agents and stuff like that. One is Reddit's subreddit called AI Agents. And there's people on there, both noobs, but also people who present themselves as currently doing consulting work for AI. And I got snagged in particular, especially attracted to this one post that said, the harsh reality of AI projects is, and then there were a bunch of them. And basically, it's things like, you know, launching the agent, you're only halfway. You need to tune it. The best agents aren't necessarily the sexiest ones. They're the ones that actually shorten a process, or they're behind the scenes, or they're doing something, but it's not because it does something complicated. I've built amazing agents that have, you know, some kind of revenue that's amazing, but it was super simple. And maybe it was like an SDR agent that was just automating some back and forth and developing, making sure we have a phone number and an industry and a product interest on every lead record so we can accelerate that through. So AI agents, there's 50% noise in that channel, but also nice to hear from somebody else talking about agents from an outside perspective. They talk about their stack, they talk about consulting, they talk about the importance of doing shadowing of a process. Go find out really how a process is working, where the slow parts are, and then come back with recommendations where the ROI is greater than $10,000. So prioritize your use cases. So this is stuff we talk about at Salesforce. It's great to be hearing about that from the outside. The second thing, another channel of information, I don't know what this summit was, but earlier this year, there was a summit in New York called the AI Engineer Summit. And all the content's on YouTube. And so you hear people from different angles. People are LLM experts, or they're AI consulting partners, or they're companies like, you mentioned Crew or others, who there's an architect or there's a head of sales or a head of marketing from that company on stage. Of course, they're presenting themselves to get their name out there. But also, there were some really good learnings in there at all levels, both for business users and for developers. So there's a channel on YouTube called AI Engineer Summit. And you know, it's probably 4 months old at this point, but unless you're talking about MCP or A2A, the new interoperability protocols, newish, it's probably still relevant. So that's what I'm excited about right now is I've gotten some stuff out of there that's like, just like reading snake oil is giving me a base to stand on that's outside of my own perspective. These YouTube channels are, or the content, the videos and stuff like that is from people who are doing it in the field for real, is giving me confidence, guidance, perspective. It's maturing my own understanding so I can go in and actually sound mature when I talk to somebody else who may have seen my content, but maybe I'm the only one who's seen these videos, and now I'm speaking with the information and experience of other people that I've collected, and now I'm relaying it to them, sounding as like I know what I'm talking about.
No,
So.
I mean, I think all of us have to figure out, that this we're just in a stage right now where we all have to be learning and figuring out what are the boundaries, what are the ways, just like I think about, when you buy a new knife, right?
Yeah.
Like one of these super cool German knives, right? It's a lot sharper than you're used to. Maybe it's shaped a little differently. The handle's a little different. The weight's different. So you have to figure out how am I going to make use of this thing so that I can continue and improve the quality, frequency, productivity of what I use it for, but also stay out of the risks of, cutting my fingers short and, drawing
Sure.
blood.
Yeah, how many times do people cut themselves after they sharpen their knives?
Right.
Now we suddenly have a new sharp tool and we're like, not sure how to use it yet. And it can do amazing things, but it probably needs to be governed.
Yeah. Well, and you got used to having a dull knife, and so rubbing it against your hand wasn't that big of an issue. You kind of felt it. You're like, oh, okay, anyways. Right. So I think that there's aspects here where employing these things, we have to make them kind of curated and let them be tools so we don't let them extend too far. Because there is certainly risk involved, but there's a lot of reward too. And it's just finding that. So we've certainly shared some great tools here on how to start that process. I'm curious, so if there's any noteworthy thing that inspired you over the last couple of weeks, maybe from one of your trips, anything you want to share with our listeners?
So I went to Japan recently, and that had some good takeaways. I think I mean all totally different thoughts. If we you said trips, it made me think about Japan. The inspiring thing for me about Japan is totally about humans. It's not about technology, and it's about how my experience with Japan was that, of course, they're hospitable. Of course, oh my God, it was so organized. There's no trash. There's pride of ownership everywhere. If there's trash on the streets, I hear that shopkeepers pick up the trash because it's everybody's
Their
responsibility.
neighborhood. Exactly. It's beautiful.
There are very few garbage cans in Japan. They're at the train stations or they're at the 7-Elevens, but they're not on the street. So Japanese people are trained to take it home and stick it in their pocket and recycle it appropriately in the right bin based on their design. So their culture function, their operations function differently than us, but also they're all very responsible in these ways. The other thing was, my takeaway was everybody's trying to make the whole society harmonious. I don't use the word harmonious. I use harmony in music to speak about harmony between people where all parts of a system are working together smoothly, whether it's your family, whether it's a party, whether it's a business meeting, whether it's a Salesforce company or your company or you're meeting with a customer. Seeking harmony is a counterbalance to making somebody uncomfortable. It's the opposite of making somebody uncomfortable. So even I've been coached that even saying the word no directly or telling somebody, isn't it true that Salesforce makes pancakes? And if you say no, oh, there's a classier, nicer way to say that where it's like, interesting that you think that way. I'm not sure. Let me look into that. But what I do know we make
Haven't
is
seen that. Yeah, I haven't seen it. Maybe.
right. Maybe it's possible. I'm not saying it's not, so there's things like that. So that was the harmony thing. How it's really a society that we can admire, learn from. It's almost like they're mature and we're teenagers.
Interesting.
And I've heard Europeans call
Good
the
analogy.
teenagers too, but we are not refined in, we're not as refined as Japan in our sense of responsibility towards society. And they're democratically elected. You know, it's not, they're not weird, some unusual form of government. So that's one. And inspiration, the second one was totally different. I'm inspired by, there's so much to learn right now.
It's like a
It
kid in a candy store for a curious person, right?
doesn't take a lot for you to distinguish yourself and be on the cutting edge right now in some way. If you're not technical, okay, what is the process consulting required, the discovery required for an agent? Or for AI, or read snake oil and come informed and understand what machine learning versus generative models are versus other forms of AI. And why would you use automation versus generative or an agent experience? You don't have to be, there's so many things to learn, and it's at all levels. And what, so I, that is true right now because of how fast AI is moving. I think my customers are tired about talking about AI. I think my customers are tired about having to research AI. I think they're tired of having to try new tools. Can we just pick a tool, please? I'm sure there's a vibe out there where people are like, can we just go? But also, I think people are, it's tricky. Like, it doesn't just do what you want automatically. You have to ask it better prompts. You have to refine the prompts. You have to look at the log data, find out what's not working right, and tweak it. So, that's a tangent, just to say, like, there's so much to learn right now. And I guess that's inspiring. It feels like there's so much opportunity. And this is not to say that there aren't risks. Like, you can misapply a knife, you can misapply a weapon, you can misapply a shovel, you can misapply a golf club. You know, you there, it's a tool. And we don't have control over how, what all the ways are people are going to apply it. But I guess I want to say, you do you. Be responsible, do the right thing, seek harmony, and you'll be on the right track.
Yeah, and stay in contact with the community. I think that was really inspiring for me was, at Tahoe Dreamin', it was the final, the ninth event, and just to see, Rob Acker came up and shared a bit about his story with Salesforce.org and just to see all the work that Bill and the organizing group put into that, and just how Charlie Isaacs was there, and it was really neat just to see how this community is so meaningful. So if anybody listening is not yet part of the Salesforce community, the Dreamit events, not just Salesforce and Trailhead DX, but the user groups, there is such an extensive community. And many of the product vendors, if you ask them, why did you choose to make this product with Salesforce? The answer they'll give you is because of how strong the community is, because the community really helps to support and push forward the things that work, right? The good solutions, the good products, the good options, they tend to float to the top. And that's a really solid thing for customers as well as for us as consultants, because it kind of gives us a little filter. The other thing I'd say is I was really happy that, I got feedback from a few product vendors who were in my session who highlighted that this perspective about creating a people-first mantra, right, that AI supports is very much what they're trying to do as a product company. And they want to connect to figure out how they can better kind of articulate that story and support people who are really trying to lead that, which I think is great. I think there's a lot of AI first aspects out there. And what you're seeing, you highlighted earlier, I was reading about Duolingo's reversal today, right? That this is important for us to recognize that these people are trying to go out on the edge and try and get ahead of AI, and think that AI has some equivalent to those valuable human skills. There are certainly skills AI can perform that humans cannot right now, right? Especially dealing with large amounts of data and, organizing it and all of that. But the ones that are the most valuable, right? When we think about, empathy and transparency and motivating people, there's one thing to give people insights. It's another one to influence them and to give them motivation to achieve what they didn't think they could, or to motivate them in a way that helps them overcome fear and doubt and uncertainty. These are uniquely human concerns, and I think so it was inspiring to see how people were very much on board, because this was my first time presenting this particular topic. So it was great to see the alignment, because I think that leads to a better future and just a more resilient and really valuable community. People just growing and continuing to occupy areas of real estate, when you think about people first concerns, that they haven't been able to occupy today. So the analogy I gave is that, hey, let AI occupy the lower floors of your building, the building of your role, and start to move and occupy into those higher floors. Now is your opportunity to do that. And what a blessing, because you can offer so much more value on those higher floors, because AI is going to take care of some of that, those lower floors for you now.
I hope we can figure out how to do that. I mean,
Yeah, that's the goal. Awesome. Well, another great week, Eric, and thanks for sharing the bread. I hope you enjoy it, and great job doing
sure. I'm not sure that was in the video, but I shared a loaf of bread I made earlier.
it. In a pizza oven. Sounds amazing.
You can bake bread in a pizza, but not in an uni. It's a Gosney, so it's got a taller, it's like a 6-inch loaf that goes in and out, and some of the doors are narrow, but yep, pizza oven.
I love it. All right, until next time.
All right. Have a good summer. I'll see you soon, probably.
You as well. All righty, bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. If you found this episode valuable, we would love your help reaching others. Please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and share this with another who would benefit.